So again, my name is Lee Benz, and I'm your host, and I wanted to thank you for coming today to hear my friend Jay, who, by the way, is a real scientist, a real homeschool dad, a real actor, and a real scuba diver. So you're going to hear a lot today that you're going to really love. I'm so glad that you're joining me for this presentation. I really think it's going to help you to understand how students need to adjust as they head off to college. So again, my name is Lee Benz, and I'm your host. Let me introduce you to my friend and fellow homeschool conference teacher, Dr. Jay Weil. You may recognize his name from science textbooks that you have at home. Dr. Weil holds a PhD in nuclear chemistry, a bachelor's in chemistry, both from the University of Rochester. He has won several awards for excellence in teaching. He's presented lectures in the U.S. and abroad on the topics of nuclear chemistry, Christian apologetics, homeschooling, and creation evolution debate. He's known for his award-winning K-12 science books. I use them myself. They are excellent. Use those with my high schooler. Dr. Weil and his wife of more than 30 years, Kathleen, have homeschooled their daughter, Dawn, from the time they adopted her until she graduated high school. So I would love for you all to join in on chat and say hello to Dr. Jay Weil. Thanks for coming, Jay. I really appreciate it very much.
Oh, it's great to be here, Lee. Thanks for your kind introduction. And yes, I am a real actor. As a matter of fact, this weekend, I am opening as the lead in Man of La Mancha. It's a role I've wanted to play for more than 30 years, ever since I was a professional actor, and I was in the chorus of that play.
Oh,
I've always wanted to play the lead role, and I get to do that starting this weekend.
Now's your chance. That's great. That's great. Okay. Well, we're eager to hear what you have to say, advice for students headed off to college, so you can take it away, okay?
Okay, very good. So I am talking about the advice for students headed off to college. College can be a pretty scary experience, can be a pretty new experience. And so it's good to get some advice from someone who's both been to college and taught at the university level. I've got a perspective I think that can help your students when it comes to figuring out what they need to do. Lee gave me a great introduction, but I do want to tell you I was a university professor, started out at Indiana University, then finished off at Ball State University. I'm now back at the university level teaching at Anderson University. I just started that a couple of years ago. So I used to be a university professor, am a university professor now. It's very interesting being a university professor in the mid-90s and now being a university professor in the 2010s, because students have changed a lot in those 25 years. It's been really remarkable, or in those 15 years. So it's been really remarkable, the change that has taken place. While I was a professor, I did help develop Indiana's only residential high school for gifted and talented students. It was a boarding school run by the state, specifically for students that the educrats thought were gifted. I've done a lot of academic research that nobody reads and has no practical application, but it did cost the U.S. taxpayers $200,000, so that's something. Anyway, the reason I got interested in homeschooling was because my best students at the university level were homeschool graduates. When I was teaching at Ball State University back in the early 90s, I didn't know anything about homeschooling, didn't even know whether or not it was legal. But I started running into these students who were head and shoulders above the rest, and they were homeschooled. So I got interested in homeschooling because I saw the products. Later on, my wife and I adopted a teenage girl who had gone to public school her whole life, but we started homeschooling her once we adopted her, and then we continued that until she graduated and went on to university herself. I currently write homeschooling and Christian apologetics material, and the publisher who's publishing my new materials is Berean Builders. They're publishing my elementary series, which is different from the Apologia series, and they're publishing my new chemistry course, which is different from the Apologia chemistry course, which is the Apologia chemistry course is no longer written by me. That leads me right into my new science courses. If you haven't heard about my elementary courses, they are written from a historical perspective. So you learn science in the order that we learned it. So you start with the science of the 6 days of creation, And then you move into human history and you start learning science in the order that it was learned in history. It's a very hands-on curriculum. Every time you do science, you do some sort of hands-on experiment, and they all use household items. So it was a lot of fun to write. In the process of writing this elementary curriculum, I learned that a lot of the science history I was taught as a scientist was absolutely wrong. Most of what scientists get taught as science history isn't correct. If you go back and read the original works, you find that we're basically being lied to about a lot of science history, and that's unfortunate. I do have a new high school chemistry book as well. Apologia came out with a new edition that didn't have me as an author, and so I wrote my own chemistry curriculum, which you might want to use. It's the same level. It's a high school chemistry curriculum, but it's very, very different from Apologia, so something you might want to take a look at too. My elementary science curriculum has won several awards. We were in Kathy Duffy's top picks, and we won the Practical Homeschooling Reader Award and so forth. So if you're not familiar with those courses, you might take a look. I see that Kay really loved the Brand Builders Chemistry course. I appreciate that, Kay. Really do. Okay, so what we're talking about today is advice for students going to college, and I'm going to give you 10 reasons. I mean, everybody does things in tens these days, top 10 lists and all that. I've got 10 things I want to, 10 pieces of advice I want to give to your students who are going to college. And the first and the very most important is don't go to college for the wrong reasons. As a professor, I see a lot of students who are in college for the wrong reasons, and it's not helping anybody. There are really only two reasons that you want to go to college. First is if you simply love to learn. If you're one of these people who just loves to learn, then college is the place for you. You're going to learn things from many different viewpoints. You're going to have to sift through ideas. And so for people who are really scholars at heart, then a university or college is the way to go. The only other reason to go to college, and truly the only other reason, is if you need a college degree for a specific career that you have in mind. So if you want to be an attorney, you're going to need to go to college. If you want to be a doctor, you're going to need to go to college. If you want to be an engineer, you're going to need to go to college. So if you have a career path in mind that requires a college degree, then it makes sense to go to college. Those are the only two reasons to go to college, the only two reasons. Any other reason to go to college, you're just wasting your time and your parents' money. If you think you're going to find yourself in college, that's not going to happen. If you think you're going to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life in college, that's not going to happen. College is a very artificial and insulating environment, and you don't learn anything about the real world when you go to college. So you will not figure out who you are or what you want to do in college. You go to college because either you love to learn or you have a career path in mind that requires a college degree. If you don't have one of those reasons, don't go to college. Get a job, try and start learning about life, and then you might find a career path in mind, a career path that requires a college degree. But don't go to college just because it's the next step. You're wasting your time and your parents' money. And I have to tell you, I see a lot of students at college doing that. They're simply going to college because it's the next step, and that's the wrong reason to go, the absolute wrong reason to go. Second, if you're going to college, you may not have experienced classroom environments before. You may not have been away from your parents a lot before. And so the college might be a kind of a frightening experience for you. My second piece of advice, the same advice Douglas Adams gives the entire universe, is don't panic. And in fact, as a homeschooler, you have an advantage compared to all of your peers. There are all sorts of studies that say homeschool graduates do significantly better at the college level than public and privately schooled graduates. Lots and lots of studies show that. I'm just going to share a few of them with you. This is probably my favorite study. It comes from the University of St. Thomas. Now, they're a Catholic university, so they split their student population into four groups. They split them into publicly schooled students, students who went to Catholic school, students who went to private but non-Catholic schools, and then homeschoolers. And so the blue bar is the homeschoolers, green bar is the publicly schooled persons, and all of that. And so in the end, what you can see is if you just look at the first year grade point average, the homeschoolers do better than the public, private, and Catholic school. They're significantly higher grade point average than any of the other groups. And that first year grade point average is really the best indicator of how well prepared they were for college. Because in the end, as they develop as a college student, they may catch up. But that first year GPA is probably the best indicator of how well prepared they are for college. And obviously, the homeschoolers are significantly better prepared than the public, Catholic, or privately schooled students. If we look at what happens after 4 years, you see the public, Catholic, and private schools have raised their GPA a little bit. The homeschoolers have raised their GPA a little bit, but not quite as much. So the other students partially catch up to the homeschoolers. They don't completely catch up to the homeschoolers, but they do partially catch up to the homeschoolers. And then you can look at what percentage of them graduated in 4 years. My daughter ended up taking a fifth year to graduate. We call that a victory lap. Most parents don't want to pay for a victory lap. So they would like to graduate in 4 years. And you can see that the homeschoolers are significantly more likely to graduate in 4 years than everybody else. What I found surprising about this is I thought the Catholic school students would be the next most likely to graduate in 4 years from a Catholic university. But in fact, it's the publicly schooled students. And the private non-Catholic school students are in last place when it comes to four-year graduation. Clearly, the homeschoolers have an advantage, whether you're talking about grade point average, graduation rate. They studied several other things, and the homeschoolers were ahead in every one of those categories. So overall, the homeschoolers are significantly better prepared for university than publicly or privately schooled students. You can look at other studies as well. So for example, the Boston University, which is a secular school, it followed its homeschool graduates over a period of 6 years. Studied the rest of its student population over those same 6 years. And you can see, once again, the homeschool graduates had significantly better grade point averages than the average of everybody else. This is true also for Baylor University, which is nominally a Christian school. It mostly teaches secular things, but it is nominally a Christian school. But once again, its homeschool population has better grade point average than the rest of the population. Ave Maria University is a different Catholic university than the one that I showed before. Once again, its homeschool graduates have the highest GPA. The 2.66 is the public school graduates, the public and private non-Catholic school graduates. The 2.88 that's there is for the Catholic school graduates. So here in a Catholic university, the Catholic school graduates have an advantage over everybody else except the homeschoolers. The homeschoolers do better than everybody else. This is true even for technical colleges. York Technical College is one of these colleges, you know, that's used to kind of get you ready to go to a four-year institution. So a technical college is sort of the low end of college. And even in the technical colleges, the homeschool graduates do better than everybody else. So clearly, on average, homeschoolers are significantly better prepared for college than the rest of the population. So don't panic. You do have an advantage when it comes to university. Stanford University, one of the Ivy League schools, it actually preferentially selects homeschoolers. It accepts roughly twice the percentage of its homeschool applicant pool than its regular applicant pool. So if you're a homeschool graduate applying to Stanford University, you are twice as likely to get in than if you're a public or private school graduate. The reason Stanford does this, according to one admissions officer, quote, "the distinguishing factor is intellectual vitality. Homeschool kids have it, and everything they do is responding to it." So in the end, homeschoolers really do have an advantage when it comes to university. Okay, so that's two pieces of advice. The third, don't use any AP or CLEP credits that are related to your major. It is very, very common for homeschool students to take an AP test or a CLEP test and then score well enough to get credit for those courses at university. There are three huge reasons why you should only do this for classes that aren't related to your major. When the class is related to your major, it doesn't matter if you could get credit for it. Take the class at the college you're going to. There are three reasons for this. The first one and the most important is the freshman university, freshman classes at college, they form the basis of your college's requirements. So you can pass the AP and CLEP without knowing everything that's covered in those classes, but every one of your future classes will have assumed that you learned that in your freshman year class. If you skip your freshman year class and didn't learn that, you're going to be behind. So, for example, at Anderson University, since I'm a nuclear chemist, our freshmen get taught nuclear chemistry. Most high school students never learn nuclear chemistry. It's on the AP test, but you can easily pass the AP test without knowing a thing about nuclear chemistry. So you could come to Anderson University, use your AP credit, but know nothing about nuclear chemistry. Well, all your rest of your classes are going to assume you know nuclear chemistry, so they're just going to assume you know that, and they're going to start teaching from that point. You're going to be confused and behind because you didn't learn that. So in the end, even if you have AP credit, if it's related to your major, please do not take that credit. A second reason is you want to impress your professors. And the way you do that is to not be a freshman in their sophomore classes. Professors are not impressed by someone who clept out of an exam. That's very common. Nobody thinks anything twice about that. So professors aren't impressed if you're a freshman taking the sophomore level classes. What impresses a professor is if you can come into his or her class and ace all of his or her tests. That's what impresses a professor. You're more likely to do that if you don't take the AP credit. Also, there are a lot of adjustments to be made your freshman year. So it's good to have a few easy A's. Why not have a few easy A's? But the main one is number one. In your major, these classes form the basis of everything you're expected to know. Don't skip out on that. Okay. Now, if you have AP credits for things not related to your major, definitely use them. The most annoying thing for me in college was taking classes I didn't care about, right? So if you're a chemistry major, but you got the AP test for history and you passed it, use that history credit. That's great. But don't use any of your chemistry or math credits, because in the end, you want to take those courses that are related to your major. It'll be an easy A. And most importantly, you'll be very, very well grounded in everything that your university wants you to know about your subject. Okay. Also, take notes in class. It's very, very important to take notes in class. There are lots of reasons for taking notes, but one of the things is taking notes allows you to review later, but it also allows you to process the information as you're learning it. But very importantly, don't take notes on a computer. Write them in your own handwriting. A 2014 study showed that those who take notes in their own handwriting retain more than those who take them on a computer. It is something about forming the words with your hands and not typing them on a screen that helps you better remember what you were learning. So in the end, don't use a computer to take notes. You can use computers for other things, but don't use a computer to take notes. Use a computer, use your hand to take notes. Now, many professors these days post their notes. Usually a university professor has what's called a learning management system. It's some website you go to get your assignments and so forth, and most professors will post their notes there. I don't care if they do that, still take your own. Because once again, it's something about forming the words with your own hands that really makes you learn them better. Now, if your professor does post notes, then don't worry about taking notes when you're having a hard time understanding the professor. Stop taking your own notes. Concentrate on what the professor's saying. And then later on, go to the professor's posted note and make your own notes from those. In the end, you want to make your own notes in your own handwriting. But if your professor does post them, then don't necessarily do that in class, especially if you're not understanding what the professor said. Instead, concentrate on what the professor says and make your own notes from the posted notes after, afterwards. Also, don't let your notes get in the way of participation. If you're confused about something, don't keep making notes. Raise your hand and ask. Don't think, well, I've got to make the notes. Stop taking the notes if you don't understand them. Raise your hand and ask. That's the whole reason you're in the class. If the professor asks a question to the class and you think you can answer it, stop taking notes and offer to answer the question. Don't say, I can't do this, I got to finish my notes. No, answer the question. Professors like student participation, especially when they're asking the questions. So you definitely want to do that. Also, don't avoid participation because you haven't gotten everything that was covered in class written down. Stop taking notes so you can participate in class. That's incredibly important. And don't worry about what the other students think of you. You will see students who never participate in class. You will see students who think it's weird to participate in class. Don't worry about that. Worry about what your professor thinks of you. And your professor wants you to participate in class, especially when he or she is the one asking the questions. All right? Now, participation is important, but don't argue with the professor in class. If you honestly think a professor has made a mistake, ask it in the form of a question. Don't phrase it like you're correcting the professor. Don't say, you made a mistake up there in the second line. It needs to be this. No, say, I'm a little confused in that second line. Why is it this and not that? So ask it in the form of a question so that that way the professor is more open to maybe admitting that he or she is wrong. But also so that you don't come across as a know-it-all, because professors don't like know-it-alls. Professors think they know it all. And if the professor says something you profoundly disagree with, don't argue, unless the professor specifically asks that he or she is looking for an argument. Sometimes a professor will say something and say, now, I want you to argue against this. And that's great. Obviously, you want to do that. But if the professor is saying something you don't agree with, don't argue with the professor in class. In the end, use this as an opportunity to talk to your professor later outside of class. There is no way you will be able to win an argument with someone who knows a lot more than you, even if you're actually right. So I've done this in several classes. I take a position that I know is wrong, and I still beat the student in an argument. I can even do that. I can even argue for a flat earth and beat any student, even though we know a flat earth is absolutely wrong. But I can argue for it and beat any student because I know more than the student. So don't think you're going to win an argument with a professor in class. It doesn't happen. If you've read those silly emails about students standing up in class and winning arguments with professors, those are fake. They don't happen. Professors win arguments typically because they know more than the students. And I can always win an argument with a student, regardless of whether I'm right or not. And along with that, sometimes you'll be faced with a situation where the professor wants an answer that you disagree with. That happens a lot. Happened a lot to me when I was in college. When a test answer is different from your beliefs, still give the answer the professor wants. That shows your professor that you studied the course material and you know what you want. Now, you can indicate that you don't agree. And that's what I used to do when I would take tests and I would have to answer something that I thought was wrong, but I knew it was what the professor wanted. I would give the answer the professor wanted. Then I'd put in parentheses or put a little star, and then somewhere else with a little star, I'd say, I don't think this is the correct answer, but I do know it's the one you're looking for. And that's how I would deal with having to give answers that I didn't agree with. But at least you're showing the professor that you know the class material. If the professor asks a question in class and you know the answer he or she wants contradicts your beliefs, don't offer to answer. But talk to the professor later. Professors have office hours, and I'm going to talk about office hours in a minute. Professors have office hours. Go to the office hours and talk to the professor in a one-on-one situation. The professor is much more likely to listen to you one-on-one than in the middle of class. If you know the professor is open, you can start, you can answer the question by saying, okay, I disagree, but this is the answer you want. But you can only do that if you know that's what the professor is willing to accept. You don't want to do that with a professor you don't know very well. If you know the professor's open to disagreement, then maybe you can say something like that in class. You can always say something like that on the test. So if you're forced to write an answer that you don't agree with, you can always say, oh, this is the answer, but I don't agree with it. But nevertheless, in class, it's a little bit different. Professors want to be in charge of their class. And if you try to take control or try to, you know, make the professor look bad in class, that never ends well. Never ends well for anybody. Okay, now remember, I was talking all about that in the context of taking notes. Once you've taken the notes, don't ignore them. Use them. Ideally, shortly after class, review those notes and think specifically about the things the professor said and what he or she emphasized. Use the notes as a review of the class. And the quicker you can do that after class, the more useful your notes are going to be. Ideally, and this you don't always have time for this, but ideally you'd actually recopy your notes. This not only allows you to make them neater, but it's a way of studying. I did best in the classes where I had time to recopy my notes and really look at them in a second light. I think that's really important. Also, when you're reading, doing the homework, whatever the professor's having you do outside of class, try to relate the materials to the notes. Of course, if you don't know your notes, you're not going to be able to do that. But if you've reviewed your notes and then you do the reading or the homework or whatever, then you might be able to relate the parts of the notes that relate to that part of the reading or that part of the homework. All right. Sixth, go to your professor's office hours. All professors post office hours. These are the times you know you can find your professor in the office, and the professor has set aside that time to answer student questions. So go interact with your professor. If you come to your professor's office hours, he or she will recognize that you have a good work ethic, and he or she will get to know you better and typically have a higher opinion of you. So just that alone is worthwhile. Now, don't go to hang out. You know, professors don't want to hang out with their students. They want to teach their students. So come with some legitimate question. If you understood everything, then come with a question that goes beyond the reading but is related to what you're learning. So it could be something you don't understand about the notes. So, for example, I told you, don't keep taking notes if you don't understand what the professor said. Really concentrate on what the professor says. Then you can go to your professor's office hours and see that block where you didn't take notes and say, okay, I didn't really understand what you were doing here. Could you go over it with me? That's the kind of stuff professors are supposed to be doing in their office hours. So take advantage of that. Your professor is not just a teacher. He or she is your tutor, and you go to the office hours to be tutored. Now, don't be a nuisance about it. Come when you have good questions and don't come when you don't have any good questions. But nevertheless, the more frequently you use the office hours for legitimate good questions, the better the professor will think of you. And that's really, really important. So definitely look at the office hours. They're always given in the syllabus, and go. Oftentimes when you get there, you'll find there are other students there, and their questions may help you as well. Go to the office hours. Don't be a nuisance. Don't go to hang out, but go with good questions, and your professors generally are happy to see you. Seventh, don't expect your professor to teach you. Your professor does not see him or herself as a teacher. Your professor sees him or herself as a facilitator, someone who will guide you through the material, all right? Generally speaking, most professors are terrible teachers. Just deal with that. Even the best teaching universities, only about half the professors are any good at teaching. It's just the way it is. So you have to be ready to educate yourself. even the good teachers expect you to do a lot of the learning on your own. So you're going to have to do learning on your own. And class time is often used not for teaching the material, but for discussion or for the professor to cover the really hard stuff. So in most universities, they expect you to do the reading before you come to class, and they assume you have. And that's where the professor starts. So don't expect this professor to explain the reading to you. Do the reading that's assigned for class before class and let your professor illuminate what you have already read. This is one reason homeschool graduates do so well in college. They're already used to learning on their own. A large amount of college learning is learning on your own or learning with your friends, and homeschool students have already been doing that. So they're used to that already. Okay, seventh. Don't expect your textbooks to be any good at all. If you've been homeschooling for a long time, you have been spoiled because you have been using texts or methodologies or whatever that are designed for learning on your own. So your textbooks primarily, if they've been written for homeschoolers, are designed to be the principal learning tool. Textbooks at a university are not designed to be the principal learning tool. They're designed to be a reference. So do the reading, but don't expect to understand it all. Hopefully, the professor will be able to illuminate what you've read once you get into class, and then maybe later in office hours as well. So the textbooks are not designed to teach. They're designed to be reference materials. Especially for your early courses in college, consider bringing the homeschool curriculum that's related to those courses. I know a lot of students who took my chemistry and physics and biology courses to their university, and they constantly referred back to my books to understand what their college textbooks were saying. And as homeschoolers, you have that advantage. You have textbooks that are actually more clear. So in the end, go ahead and use those. Your textbook's lack of explanation generally provides a lot of questions that you can go and ask in the office hours. So a lot of the questions that I expect you to ask in office hours are going to be because you didn't understand what this stupid book is saying. And that happens a lot. All right. Eighth, and this is less academic, but it ends up being a very important academic issue. Choose your friends wisely. The easiest way to flunk out of college is to choose the wrong friends. Meeting new people and making new friends, some of them will become lifelong friends. I still have the best man in my wedding was someone I met at college. So yes, you have lifelong friends that you meet at college. And so it's an important part of college. But it's also dangerous because if you fall in with the wrong people, and I don't mean because they're, you know, doing drugs and stealing stuff. I'm just talking about students who are more interested in having fun than learning. If you get into a crowd that's more interested in having fun than learning, it's an easy way to flunk out of university. You need to try and find friends who have the same goals as you do. You want to find friends who want to succeed in college, who have similar goals in terms of, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with your life and so forth. If you don't hang out with people who have similar goals, you're going to end up perhaps being drugged down and changing your goals. And that can be really, really bad. So my daughter, for example, went to a school. It's a very well-respected school, one of what I would consider the most academically rigorous university in Indiana. But it has a lot of partiers and a lot of students who flunk out. So they lose a lot of freshmen because there are a lot of partiers there. So when my daughter said, I want to go to Butler University, I said, okay, you can do that. But I'm going to require you to join and be active in a campus Christian fellowship. That way you're less likely to be dragged down by partiers. So I think it's very important to choose your friends wisely. Make sure they're not going to drag you down. That's really important. And your friends are really important for academics as well. Most of my friends at university were science majors because they helped me study. Because most professors are lousy teachers and the books aren't designed to teach, you will need some help learning. And that help can come from your fellow students. I learned the majority of what I learned in university, not in classes, not in office hours, but when me and my friends got together and banged our head against the books till we figured it out. That's how I learned the most when it comes to university. So choosing your friends wisely also can help you academically because they can be an important part of your learning process. But remember, when you get together to study, that's study time. It's not social time. They're your friends, and you want to get together and have social time, and you should. But when it's time to study, it's time to study. We turn off all the social stuff, and we start talking about the books, and we start talking about the class because we need to figure out what's going on in the class. All right? Ninth, make an effort to avoid distractions. There are a lot of distractions, especially now. When I went to university, there weren't nearly as many distractions as there are today. But there are a lot of distractions. So, for example, turn your phone off when you start classes for the day. There's no message that's so important it can't wait till you're done with classes. Turn your phone off and don't turn it on again until you're done with classes. That way, you're not going to be distracted by texts and phone calls and things like that. Don't use a calculator app on your phone. Don't say, "Oh, I'll get my phone just for the I'll use my phone, but only for the calculator app." That's not going to happen because in the end, you'll open your phone to get the calculator. You'll see there are text messages and all that. No, no. Buy a $15 calculator that's separate from your phone and use it. Turn your phone off when you start class and don't turn it back on for any reason until you stop class. That way, you can concentrate on classes when you're supposed to be in classes. It's also a real temptation to spend a lot of time on social media, but try to limit your time. And if you notice, if you recognize that you have problems limiting your time, find someone to help to have them change your password. Then they can give you the password when it's time to do social media. All right. I've actually had two students do that. Two of my Anderson University students, I saw that they were using social media way too much. And so I suggested to both of them, have a friend of yours change your password and then ask for your password every time you want to use social media and then have them change it after you're done. This will limit your time on social media. Both of those students did it. Both their grades soared as a result. So don't be too ashamed to say, "Oh, I can't handle myself. I can't control myself." Find someone you trust and say, "I'm going to give you, please change my password, and I'll ask you for my password whenever I want to use social media." I don't say that as a first step. Try to limit your own time. But if you can't limit your own time, then either get off of social media entirely or have your friend change your password, because it's very, very important to avoid distractions. It's so easy to say, "I'm going to check Facebook and Instagram for 5 minutes," and then 2 hours later, you realize you're late for class. That's just too easy. All right. 10th, it's a sad thing, but expect unfair grades from time to time. Especially homeschooled students, they're used to negotiating grades, right? I get emails all the time from parents who say, "You know, I graded the problem this way. The student says it should be this way. Who's right?" Okay. And so students are used to arguing with their mom and dad about their grades. You're not going to be able to do that with your professors, right? Now, sometimes your professors make mistakes, and sometimes they're willing to admit it. I certainly do. Whenever a student comes to me with a challenge on the grade, I'm always willing to listen because I'm always willing to admit that I made a mistake. Some professors aren't willing to do that. Most are. However, in the end, sometimes some professors just won't admit the mistake. And oftentimes, especially in classes like history and English, they'll put their personal biases above accurate grading. And so they won't like the point you're making in an essay. And even though the essay is brilliant, they'll give you a bad score because of their own personal biases. It's sad, but it happens. All right. So if you think your professor has graded something wrongly, go to him or her during office hours. Never do this in class. Never challenge a grade in class. That is the most likely way to get your professor to ignore you completely. Right. Go to your professor during office hours and phrase things in the form of the questions. You know, say, you know, I'm wondering why you mark this wrong, because it seems to me, you know, but phrase it in the form of a question. Try and get your student to understand that sometimes there'll be bad grades, but it's worth at least talking to your professor. But if the professor doesn't fix things, don't fight it. Accept the fact that sometimes grading will simply be unfair. Quite frankly, it's practice for life, because life is unfair. Life is terribly, sadly, horribly unfair. And so the fact that grading is unfair is just a part of life. And so you might as well accept it and get on with it. Okay, most of all, here's the, oh, these, this is all separate from the 10 pieces of advice I'm giving you. But most of all, remember that college can be one of the best experiences of your life, or it can be one of the worst experiences of your life. And it's up to you as to whether it's one of the best or one of the worst. If you focus on your classwork, but still make some time for fun and friends, you will enjoy everything about college life, and college will be a blast. If you focus on fun and friends, you'll have a great time for a while, but the constant academic failure will drag you down and either make college miserable for you or make you leave college. So focus on your classwork and then just make some time for fun and friends. That's the way to make college one of the best experiences of your life rather than one of the worst experiences of your life. Just like homeschool, if you sacrifice some fun in college, you'll have a lot more fun later on in life. So some of this is all about deferred gratification. You can't just have fun all of the time. You can't do that as an adult. You can't do that as a college student. Do what you need to do and have fun after what you need to do is done. Okay? All right. And as a general rule of thumb, this is different for every student, but as a general rule of thumb, expect to spend 2 to 3 hours outside of class studying for every hour you are in class. So, for example, a full-time load is usually somewhere between 12 and 16 hours. If your full-time load is between 12 and 16 hours, expect to be spending 24 to 48 hours during the week outside of class studying. That's just the way it is. If you want to succeed in your college classes, you will be spending 2 to 3 hours of outside class time studying. So every hour you spend in class, multiply that by 3, and that's the number of hours you'll be spending on schoolwork. So if you take 16 credits, you're going to be spending a minimum of 48 hours a week just studying and going to class. Right? That's more than a full-time job, but then you have the rest of the week to have a lot of fun. Don't think you can just go to class and then do a little bit of homework a couple nights a week. No, you're spending 2 to 3 hours outside of class for every hour that you're in class. Okay. So I think that's it. Yeah, now we're up to questions. So I need to do questions. So I think I'm going to start from the top. Rhonda says that's really good advice. Thank you very much. Karen asks, how does dual enrollment play into this? So dual enrollment, once again, if you've taken a college course, you've gone to college, like my daughter, a perfect example. My daughter went to college for 2 classes. She went to college for French, and she went to college for psychology. Well, that was dual enrollment. She was doing that while she was a homeschooler. So she was homeschooling most of the time, but she had a psychology class at college, and she had a French class at college. When she went off to university, she was thinking of studying sociology, and that's what she got her major in. Well, sociology and psychology are pretty closely related, especially based on what she wanted to do. So she took the credit for French and applied that to her university. But she did not take the credit for psychology. She went ahead and took the Butler University psychology class. Now, if you're dual enrollment in the same college that you're going to go to college, then that's fine. Go ahead and take all your dual enrollment credits because you're there at that college. But if your dual enrollment credits are not at the college you are going to, then and they're related to your major, don't take them. Take any dual enrollment credits that are not related to your major, but not the ones that are related to your major. So really, it's just like CLEP and AP. Only take those credits if they apply, if they do not apply to your major. Amanda's asking, do you have any suggestions for anyone interested in doing a science course in high school after completing the anatomy course? So you've done, I assume the student has done biology, chemistry, physics, and then done anatomy. Well, if they chose anatomy, that indicates to me they probably have a biology bent. If so, Sherry Seligson has a wonderful marine biology course. Apologia publishes that. It's called Exploring Creation with Marine Biology. Just came out with a new edition, and it's lovely. So if she hasn't done, if he or she hasn't done marine biology and likes biology, that's an option. If the student, by taking anatomy, you might be thinking the student might be want to be a doctor or a nurse or something like that. If that's the case, Apologia has an advanced chemistry course. That's a second year of chemistry course. When put together with the first year course, that covers the entire AP syllabus. So that would give them a good founding in a good grounding in chemistry, which every doctor needs. Nurses not so much, but doctors especially. So those are a couple of options. If you've finished all of those, if you've done those for some reason, and you want or you want something else. There are two books you can get that would make a wonderful astronomy course. There's a book called Universe by Design. It gives you sort of the cosmology of the universe. And then there's a book called Patterns in the Sky, which tells you how to understand the stars at night. So the Patterns in the Sky book would be kind of a laboratory component because you're learning about the stars and you're seeing the stars and you're tracing the patterns and so forth. And then the book, Universe by Design, would be the textbook work. And so that would make a really good high school astronomy course if you did both of those books. But like I said, if they're interested in medicine, advanced chemistry, if they're just interested in biology, marine biology. That marine biology is a wonderful course. Sherry Seligson's an excellent writer, excellent teacher, and a very knowledgeable marine biologist. She's the one who designed the Living Seas Aquarium for Epcot. She didn't design the artwork of it. She designed the actual physical environment and so forth, keeps the fish alive. So she knows a lot about marine biology. Suzanne's asking, how did the professor take you saying that you didn't agree with the answer he or she wanted? You know, I ended up doing this in probably four classes. I can think of at least four classes that I did this in when I was in college. And of course, I was in college in the dark ages, so things have changed a little bit. Of those four professors, one never made any comment. One would put a smiley face, and that's all she would do is just put a smiley face next to it. The other two actually asked me to come to their office hours to talk about it, and both of them were very receptive. They honestly wanted to know why I disagreed with them. So I say I was hitting, you know, 50%. At least two of the professors out of four really wanted to talk to me about it. And you can always take the initiative yourself, too, if you feel like you're professor is going to be open to this, you can go to the office hours and say, you know, if you're wondering why I said this on the question, here's why. So that's always an option as well. Let's see. You mentioned it is not good to come to a sophomore class as a freshman. Is this a generalized rule? Would you suggest not taking CCP classes in, say, calculus, physics? Son is interested in engineering pathway. So Lori, I would definitely not recommend skipping out of freshman calculus-based physics if your son's interested in engineering. Because once again, there's just going to be some stuff in that freshman engineering course that he doesn't know, simply because you can pass those courses and still not know what your university wants you to know. And also, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. Let's suppose, you know, you've got two children and one of them, we struggled with chemistry and we basically got through. I don't know if you noticed that when you did chemistry with your second child, you understand it a lot better. This is the way the human mind works. When you see something new for the first time, you can grasp it to a certain level. But if you see it again, you can grasp it at a deeper level. Even if the subject matter doesn't go any deeper, you just understand it better. one of my favorite quotes from a thermodynamics expert is, the first time I took thermodynamics, I didn't understand it at all. The second time I took thermodynamics, I started understanding it. And this is a guy who does thermodynamics for a living now. So in the end, even if your child learned everything that he or she needs to know, sit through that freshman calculus-based physics course again, and I bet you you'll understand the calculus-based physics better the second time through. It'll be an easy A, and you'll impress your professors better. Now, if you've got something outside your major that you want to take as a sophomore and a freshman, or as a freshman in a sophomore level class, and you can do that, that's fine. If it's outside your major, those are quote unquote fun classes. I call them quote unquote annoying classes. But you know, sometimes you might want to take a fun class. But if it's related to your major, don't go in as a freshman taking sophomore level courses. It's just not a good idea. Kendall says, can't you take the AP course and then also take the Gen Ed course in college as well? Absolutely. You just don't take the credit. And a lot of students do this. A lot of students take the AP course in high school just to be really, really prepared. And then they go ahead and take it again in college. And that's what I recommend if it's related to your major. And you know, it's nice on your academic transcript to note that the student took the AP test and got this grade on it. That's really good. Just don't use it as credit if it's related to the student's major. Okay, I'm scrolling. Oh, here are some more questions now. I'm scrolling through. As far as taking CLEP AP tests, it's hard to know what your major will be when you're in high school. Are there any good general CLEP tests that are likely to be in a college major? So, Michelle, what I would say here is take the AP CLEP test that you feel prepared for. You'll spend a little money taking the test, and put that on your transcript, you know, on the transcript where you list that the student took history, U.S. history. On that transcript, note that the student got a 5 on the AP U.S. history exam. This will indicate to the person reviewing the transcript that the AP history class he took was really, really good. So that will strengthen what the student looks like on the transcript, but it doesn't obligate you to take that credit. So in the end, when you go into college, you think you know what your major is. Just don't take any of the credits that are related to your major. But go ahead and take as many AP tests as you want, because it costs a little money, but it will really strengthen your transcript. It'll make your student's transcript stronger. Any advice for taking a gap year for work or study? I think there are some students who, if they take a year off, are less likely to go to school. I think there are some students who, if they take the year off, are more likely to go to school. So I can't give you a general rule of thumb. What I can tell you is this. If the student doesn't seem motivated to go to college, then definitely take a gap year and see if the student's motivated the next year. Because after a year of working at some, you know, low-level job, maybe he or she will be more motivated to go to college. So I see gap years as more of a motivational tool. The only other thing I would say is if your student has some life-enriching experience that he or she can do. So, for example, I know one student who took 2 years off to teach English as a second language in Costa Rica and then Thailand. All right, so she went to Costa Rica for a year, Thailand for a year, taught English as a second language, and then came back and went to college. That's a great idea. Because that's a life-enriching experience that's still academically oriented and so forth. I'd strongly recommend gap years for things like that. Other than that, I would think a gap year might be a good motivational tool for some students. Lucinda's asking, any advice for a science-minded students to explore different career choices? I think one of the best ways for science-minded students to explore different career choices is to take advantage, if you've got a university near you, these universities have guest lecturers come all the time. It's usually an evening event. If you go to their website, you can usually find where these lectures are and when they are and so forth. Have your student go to these guest lectures that are related to science. Some of them will be stupid, but some of them might spark an interest in a career. Also, I'm always a big fan of a student using some homeschool time to shadow a person. So if, like, for example, my daughter thought she wanted to be a vet, And so I had her shadow a vet for a while. She found out that a vet needed to take way too much science, so she decided not to be a vet. But anyway, I think shadowing during high school can be a good thing. See if you can find somebody. If your student thinks he or she may want to be an engineer, is somebody in your church an engineer that would let your student come a couple days out a week and just see what he or she does? So any kind of exploration like that. If you have a museum near, oftentimes museums have people come in and lecture as well. And so once again, you can find those kinds of things. And these lectures kind of give the student an idea of what's going on right now in the field. And that might help them decide what they may want to do. Are there certain CLEP AP tests you recommend taking since it's hard to know? I think I answered that already. I think it got repeated. I just say take any CLEP or AP test that you think your student's qualified to take. If nothing else, it'll strengthen the transcript. And then later on, you can decide whether or not to take the credit based on whether or not it's related to a major. Cynthia is asking, what factors do you consider when making the final decision on a college you have been admitted to? Obviously, there are a lot of factors that go into college. For example, as a Christian, I went to a secular university, and my spiritual life blossomed at a secular university. My wife was a Christian when she went to university. She went to a Christian university, and her spiritual life was kind of stagnant. If you are the kind of person who responds well to being challenged in your faith, I think a secular university is a great choice for you. If you're not a person who responds well to being challenged in your faith, a Christian university is a good choice for you. That's one of the factors. Another factor you have to consider is somebody's paying a lot of money for this, so you need to get a degree that's worth something. So you want to go to a school that's well-recognized in that area. How do you know whether a school is well-recognized in the area? Ask the department what their acceptance rate into graduate school is. Well, the acceptance rate into graduate school is in the 80s or so, 80%, 90%, something like that. It's a very good school for that discipline. So in the end, that's a very important thing. Find a university that's very well respected in that discipline. But of course, it also has to be a university you can afford, and you also has to be a university that's not going to damage your child spiritually. These are all things you have to consider. Any advice for my junior to help him narrow down his possible majors? Absolutely not. I have no idea. I mean, the only thing I can do is say, you know, try and find out, you know, what really excites your student and try and focus them on those possible majors. It's always hard to jump into a university without any goal path in mind, and I really don't recommend that. I really don't recommend saying, okay, I'll go to university and decide what I want to major in then. No. You might say, I'll go to university and decide which science field I want to major in. I can handle that. Or I'll go to university and decide whether I'm going to be a psychologist or a sociologist. I could handle that. But don't say, oh, I don't even know what I want to do. I'm just going to go to college. That's a really bad idea. So maybe that's another reason for a gap year, to spend some time actually exploring different career options or something like that. You mentioned note-taking by hand during class and benefits over using a computer. What's your advice for dyslexic or dysgraphic students? Okay, Michelle, that's a really – or Marcella, sorry, that's a really good point. This advice isn't universal. There are going to be special cases, and I would think especially for dysgraphic and dyslexic students, taking notes with the aid of technology would probably be better. Experienced in the field of learning challenges, so I'm not sure I can give you much better advice than that. Sorry about that. Definitely only do the handwritten notes if you think your student is capable of doing handwritten notes. L asks, is it a good idea to do a lighter degree if you really love the subject? I don't think so. I really don't like these light degrees. If you don't know what light degrees mean, so for example, in chemistry, I could have gotten a Bachelor of Arts in chemistry or a Bachelor of Science in chemistry. A Bachelor of Science is the harder version of the degree. It requires you to take more advanced science courses. I think the BA in chemistry is useless. I would never recommend a BA in chemistry if your university offers a BS, because the BS is the better degree. So no, I'm not a fan of taking lighter majors. I don't like that. Do Ivy Tech TSAP science courses in chem, physics, and bio transfer to Anderson? They do. You definitely need to check with the university on those very specific classes you have in mind. So, for example, some of my thermodynamics students at Anderson University, their general physics from Ivy Tech qualified them to take my thermodynamics course. So that transferred, but not every class transfers. The School of Science and Engineering there at Anderson University is very helpful in deciding which classes will transfer and which won't. So feel free to contact them directly via email or via phone, and they'll tell you what you can and can't use to transfer. Lilia says, which citation style should college-bound students be familiar with? Be familiar with any one of them, any one of the standards. Because in the end, most likely, your professor will want a different standard. But the idea is if you're able to conform to one standard, then you'll be able to conform to any other standard once you're given it. So, you know, for example, MLA is probably the classic one. Maybe do MLA. But the key is get them used to conforming to one standard. That way, when they're faced with any other standard, they'll be able to conform to it. How do you pronounce your name? I'm Jay Weil. It rhymes with smile. A lot of people say Wiley, but that's not correct. It's Weil. It rhymes with smile. Is it good to get your professor's phone number or email? No, only if they offer. If it's on the syllabus, feel free to use it. If it's not on the syllabus, don't get it. Some professors are weird about that. And so they'll be upset if you get their phone or email and there isn't something that's supposed to be public knowledge. Miriam, I would say use it if the professor offers it, but don't use it if the professor doesn't offer it. How important is where you go to college? My son is almost halfway through an engineering tech program, but feels his education is substandard. He has a full ride scholarship to the tech school, but is still thinking of transferring to a four-year school for aerospace engineering. I would definitely recommend that, Michelle. Tech schools are good as a jumping off point, but especially if you're going to go for an advanced degree, get out of the tech school and get into the four-year university. Or if you're going to try and get a job in that field right out of a university, once again, get out of the tech school and go to the 4 years college. It is worth spending money if you've got it. Now, if you don't have it, the question's moot and you do what you can. But if you've got the money, it's worth spending the money on a 4 year university. Can you tell us about your new chemistry book and how it's different from Apologia? My new chemistry book has completely different experiments. I think the experiments are much, much, much better. They're definitely more quantitative. They're definitely more like you would get in a college prep high school. I think the experiments are much better. I personally think the book is organized better. What Apologia seemed to do was take my book, chop it up into pieces, and then rearrange the pieces. And as a result, the flow isn't there. If you go to my blog, which is blog.drwile.com, blog.drwile.com, there's an actual article where a student and her mother compare my book and the Apologia book. They started with the Apologia book, got so frustrated they ordered my book, and now they're doing a side-by-side comparison. And you'll see one of the things a student says is the topics just don't flow well in the Apologia book. Kendall, that's what I would say. But once again, you can check my blog to see what the parent and her daughter thinks. What course would you recommend if the student is interested in shipbuilding? Wow. He has completed biology, chemistry. Next year, he'll take calculus and physics in 10th grade. How about a statistics dynamics course? I don't know of any statistics dynamics course that you can parent can take. If you're going to do a calculus-based physics course, that's fantastic. Try and cover a full year of calculus-based university-level physics. That's awesome. But I don't know of any advanced course that that you can teach. Now, there are courses that MIT and several universities offer for free. They're video lectures online where you follow a book and you have a syllabus. You just don't get any help or credit. But you can watch the professor's lectures and follow the assignments in the book. And those are free. You might look at that for a statistics or a dynamics course. I don't know one that book that the parents can use, but I know with those lecture helps, oftentimes these MIT freeware courses can really be a benefit. So Dana, I already did talk about a transitional gap year, especially if you're going abroad. I think that's a wonderful idea. Learn a new culture and so forth. I think that's fantastic. It can be a good motivational tool as well. Tim Malmstrom, I recognize that name. Hi, Tim. Tim's taking one of my classes. he says he used my Berean Builders Chemistry last year and loved it. These days, he and his siblings are in my physics course, and they are a delight to have in class. And yes, you can take you can take an AP course and pass the AP test and still take the general ed course. You just don't accept the credit. You don't apply for the credit. The university is only going to give you credit if you apply for it by saying, here's my AP score. If you don't apply for it, the university doesn't care. You take the general ed course. So you can pass the test, but you don't have to skip the course. Is there a best way to go about exploring majors? Lori, that's a really tough question. I would say narrow it down to some general topic. And then if you were listening before when I answered the question about trying to focus, universities and museums and so forth often have guest lecturers come in. If you narrow it down to some general topic, maybe by visiting a lot of these guest lectures and so forth, you can get a better idea of what's going on in those general fields. May is asking how to prepare a student with dysphoria for note-taking. Unfortunately, May, I can't tell you that. I am just not qualified to answer a question like that. I don't know a lot about learning challenges. I'm very sorry. Now, there are people who do. One thing you might do is look at Learning Without Labels. They're a company that deals with learning challenges, so they might be able to help you. I'm sorry, I can't. I'm not qualified to answer the question. Any answer I give you would be just hogwash. So I don't want to lead you astray. What would you say to the parents who say that they're afraid their child may get too attached to having an income to go back and not having a – yeah. So for a gap year, you can always run the risk of the student saying, it's nice to have money coming in. If I leave and go to college, I won't have money coming in anymore. I'm going to keep my job. Well, you know, that may be the student's path. That may be their path to work a job just to be a good family man, you know, and that's not a problem. That's a good goal. So I think, you know, at some point you have to trust your student's decision making. If the student, you know, maybe spends 2 or 3 years with his income and sees very little upward mobility, maybe that would be then a jog to get them to go to college. That is always an issue with a gap year. So you have to think about that. You have to decide whether or not a gap year is the best for your student's motivational factor. But I would tell you, remember, you're training your students now so they can make good decisions later in their life. And those decisions may not always be the ones you want them to make, but if you've trained them well and you've prayed and you've trained them as what's right, at some point you've got to trust them that they're going to make the right decisions for their life. Yeah, and unfortunately, Holly, I can't answer questions about dyslexia or dysgraphia. I just am not qualified, and I don't want to give you a hogwash answer. Sorry about that. How do you prepare for note-taking in the high school years as a home scholar? That's a great point, Kylie. Here's what I would do. I am a big fan of sending your child to a tech school or to a local university, local college for 1 or 2 classes while they're still in homeschool. I think it's a good way to introduce them to the classroom environment. So that's a good way to get them to practice note-taking. If you really don't want to do that or don't have the money or opportunity to do that, then go check out some of these free university lectures. If you go to just type in free university course on free university video course in Google and go look for a couple of video lectures, and you watch the lecture with the student, you have a student take notes from the lecture, and you work with them in getting those notes to be representative of what the lecture was about. But ideally, you would send them to a tech school or to a local college for at least 1 or 2 homeschool courses. So the Apologia High School texts were not written by you. Some of them are and some of them aren't. So their High School Anatomy is not written by me, but it's a very good course, and I strongly recommend it. Their Marine Biology is not written by me, but it's a very good course, and I strongly recommend it. Their high school chemistry course is not written for me, and I strongly do not recommend it. Their biology, general science, physics, advanced chemistry, and advanced physics are all written by me. And so obviously I recommend those courses. My blog. Oh, there we go. Lee's got a seminar for disabilities. So, I'm sure Lee is a lot more qualified to answer questions on things like that than I am. So the apology of high school books, some of them are written by me, some of them are not. My blog address is blog.drwile, and it's not spelled out. It's drwile. So blog.drwile.com. And Berean Builders carries all of my books. So if you're just interested in finding out which books I've written, if you go to BereanBuilders.com, which is there on the screen, they carry all the books that I've written. And other books that I haven't written, but I recommend. What majors would you recommend for a child who has a passion for endangered animals? Definitely want to be a biologist, probably specializing in ecology. So I would recommend a biology major, and then you'll probably end up specializing in ecology, which is the relationships between animals and their environments. Will I be offering any advanced online science courses? No, not yet. I'm not ready to start teaching advanced courses online. I'm just teaching the standard ones. Do you recommend starting out in a 2-year school and transferring from a 4-year school? I would only recommend that if it's necessary from a financial standpoint, or if it's necessary because you can't get into the school you want to get into. If you can get into the school you want to get into and you can afford it, go for it and spend all 4 years there. You get a much better education if you get it all from the same place. But once again, it's not always financially feasible, and sometimes you can't get in. So do what you can. But yeah, how do you like Anderson? We believe our son will do best at a Christian college. Is Anderson more Christian in name, or would you consider? It's definitely a Christian college, Cinda. Anderson University. Now, it doesn't have a real dogmatic stance. So in the science department, for example, we have the science, the sciences, we have young earth creationists, we have old earth creationists, and we have theistic evolutionists. So we have all versions of Christian responses to evolution or to evolution in our science division. And we openly encourage dialogue. So, for example, our astronomy professor is an old earth creationist, but he has me give one lecture in his intro astronomy course every year on evidences for a young earth, because he thinks it's important for students to see that legitimately Christians can hold different views on things like that. So we are a very Christian school. You have to go to chapel twice a week and all of that. And a lot of professors start and end class with prayer. A lot of professors will pray with you, but we don't hold a really strong dogmatic line on much of anything except love Jesus. Lori asked, would you recommend for further study for a 15-year-old who's taking physics now and also pre-calculus and is interested in engineering? Wow, so that is an advanced student. Well, I would definitely recommend the advanced physics course. That's another course offered by Apologia, and it's a second year of physics that goes far deeper. Once you finish that, if he's still interested in engineering, then I would probably recommend trying to find a college class that he can take that's engineering physics. That would probably be the next step. Do you teach your chemistry book online for homeschoolers? Yes, I do. Registration typically opens up in early March, and you'll find that at the BereanBuilders.com website. What are your thoughts on getting an online degree? I think online degrees can be valuable in certain fields. So, for example, an online law degree can be very valuable. An online sociology degree can be pretty valuable. There are some degrees that aren't valuable at all online. If you're going to get an online degree, make sure it's from a school that's really well known and accepted. The two I think of right off the bat are University of Phoenix. I think the better choice is Western Governors University, WGU. I think that's probably the best online university going right now. So that's my thoughts on that. Brenda has an artsy child that's interested in drawing, drama, and writing. She's interested in science, but obviously takes some sciences. Should you just take the basics? Yeah. Brenda, I think your goal is to get them through biology, chemistry, and physics before they graduate. But in the end, not every student reaches that goal. And your student focusing on drawing, drama, and writing may not reach that goal. But nevertheless, that's the general goal. Get them through the three basics. And if you do that, you're in really good shape. Okay. Well, I actually have an appointment. I'll answer this last question, but then I have to go. I've got a 6:30 rehearsal for this play I was telling you about. So I have to go at 6:15. So Angela's got the last question of the day. Do you recommend your university for engineering? It is accredited for engineering. I think it's a good choice. There are better schools for engineering right now. Our engineering program at Anderson University is still pretty young. It's good, and our students are getting jobs as engineers, so and it is accredited. But if your student can handle a large university, the secular school, then I think Purdue is probably a better choice overall. If you can handle the money, Rolls-Hulman is the best choice in Indiana anyway. But Anderson University is probably a close third to those two.
Okay. Wow, that was just great information. Thank you so much, Jay, for being here. Boy, we had a lot of questions about specific colleges. And
Glad I didn't take much time on the. I think I spent 45 minutes on the talk and another half an hour on questions.
That was great. Well, I did warn everybody up front that you were a real actor, so I know you really have to go. I have to chime in because my husband is an engineer, so I have to say before we end that if you're thinking about engineering, make sure that the school is ABET accredited, A-B-E-T accredited. Absolutely. So